There are some classical texts that have never really gone out of style. The Bible, of course. Marcus Aurelius' Meditations. Plato's Republic. In 1,000 years from now, will anyone be reading our great authors? English professor Mark Edmondson thinks that there was an idealism in some of those great works that stands as a kind of antidote to the shallowness of our age. In his new book, Self and Soul, he calls for a return to the idealism of the past. He talked with Raymond Tangekar about the value of reading Homer, Plato, and the great sages of the ancient world.
So, Mark, you've written this thoughtful exploration of three ancient ideals, and in it, you kind of make the case that we've lost our way, that, you know, all the luxuries and modern conveniences that we live with have made us self-absorbed, narcissistic, materialistic. Basically, we're more concerned with the self than the soul. How did you come to this conclusion?
Well, through observation and through reading, my two great vehicles for revelation. But I think more and more we have become a self-seeking, a bourgeois society, believing that we can be happy with, you know, acquisition of comforts and position and property and respect and all those things. I think that maybe that's true for some people, but I would like my students to know that there's another way of life, and that way of life pivots around the ideals.
Well, let's tease apart these ideals one by one.
Sure.
The first one that you talk about is courage, which you see best illustrated in the Iliad, and specifically in the examples of Hector and Achilles. So what do they teach us about courage?
Well, Hector is very much like the legendary citizen soldier of America in World War II. And that citizen soldier was very modest, not interested in ridding the world of fascism, not interested in restoring democracy, just wanting to get over there, get the job done, protect his home, and then go home and live a quiet life. After war, he spoke very little, in his ideal form anyway, of what he had achieved there or what he had seen there. But really, those people absolutely saved the world. It looked very dark for a long time. So that old ideal of the citizen soldier seems to be leaving us. And then there's that very rare ideal of the absolutely committed warrior who is never afraid to die, will do anything for his friends and anything for his country and anything for his reputation. And that's Achilles, who wants to be the greatest fighter who ever lives. And that's a much rarer kind of ideal. It occurs not commonly at all. But I think that there are probably fewer people pursuing that ideal, though I can't be sure. And both of these warrior ideals have gone into disrepute with the generally educated classes in our country. I think there's a level of skepticism and then moving on to contempt among many college-educated people for people who are in the armed services. I think that's a mistake.
Are you saying that in order to cultivate this ideal, you have to be a member of the armed services, or could this exist within a non-military context?
I think that the essence of courage is what Hector embodies, the willingness to fight and die for one's country. That doesn't mean there aren't other brave acts to be seen, and we can't talk about somebody as being brave who stands up for a position that's unpopular or writes something that's not well-liked or sticks to his guns in this way or that. But I do think that there's one essential quality that brave people have, and it's the willingness to fight and die to defend one's country.
Well, I can imagine that some people would be hearing you tout the virtue of courage and think, you know, okay, if you take that to its logical conclusion, what you really get is just war without end. I mean, is that really a virtue we should be promoting?
No. The warrior Hector will only fight when he realizes his cause is just. The warrior Achilles will fight, broadly speaking, when his nation says the war is just. But the problem of war is a political problem. It's a problem of our democracy. And if we have Hectors and we have Achilles, we need to be in a position to send them out only into wars about which we feel very full conviction. I think that some of my friends, my progressive friends, believe that there should be no war ever. Mm-hmm. I believe that too. But even Plato, the most humane of all philosophers, I think, said that he could imagine a day when there would perhaps be no war among the Greeks, but he could never imagine a day when there'd be no war, period. And I agree with him, alas.
Well, let's move on to another ideal that you write about. I mean, one that would seem kind of surprising, given that we've been talking about this warrior ideal.
Yes.
And that's the ideal of compassion, which you see illustrated right in the examples and teachings of Jesus, Confucius, and the Buddha.
Yes, those are my big three. There's so many great stories in the Gospels and wonderful stories in the Buddhist texts, the Torah, in Confucius as well. But one of the best ones is what's called the miracle of the loaves and fishes, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the standard story is that, you know, a great crowd of people follows Jesus for day after day. They listen to a preach. They pray with him. They become hungry. They become tired. It looks like they are really, really going to have to walk home, maybe not of starvation, but of illness and great pain. And so Jesus collects some bread and he collects a few fishes and he blesses them and it feeds the entire crowd. What a miracle. Well, maybe it was, in fact, a miracle. Maybe it was a divine intervention of some sort. But I suspect that what Jesus and his disciples did was reach in their pockets and pull out what they had. Had a couple of fishes, they had a couple of loaves of bread, and they distributed their last food. And the people who were hanging around with them said, yeah, you know, I do have a little bit in my pouch, too. And out they brought it, and they shared it, and they shared it, and they shared it. And what had been a crowd became a community. And people who had been relative strangers to each other became temporarily brothers and sisters. That's a miracle.
I think few people would deny that, you know, Jesus, Confucius, and the Buddha are great exemplars of compassion. But, I mean, there are modern examples of this, too, right? You know, you have people like Dorothy Day, Martin Luther King Jr., Cesar Chavez. And I'm sure there are countless others like them who we never hear about. So are we really lacking in compassion?
Most of the figures you mentioned are political figures who sought justice. And I have the greatest respect for justice, but I would dare to put compassion a notch above. A compassionate individual is somebody who says, there is no me, there is no you, we are all one. And I think there are such people. I've been teaching at the University of Virginia now for 30 years, and 5 years before that at Yale University. And I love my students. They're smart and lively and decent. But as time has gone on, I have seen fewer of them say, I'm going to live for others. I'm going to protect other people. I'm going to seek knowledge or wisdom. I'm going to be a great artist. I don't care where the money comes from. I've seen less of that. And in the country at large, I've seen more and more people who are interested in feathering their own nests and lying down in them. It's hard to blame them. Look at all the great stuff we got. Big screen TVs, amazing stereos. And these things are inexpensive, in part because they're made in other nations and our working people have no more jobs. But we don't care that much.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to another ideal that you talk about, that of wisdom.
Yeah.
And you use Plato and Emerson as examples.
Mm-hmm.
The question is how to actually achieve that, right? Because as you point out, there's so many distractions. There's family, there's work, and there's all this other noise that keeps us self-absorbed or self-interested. Is it possible to cultivate this kind of contemplative side without completely withdrawing from the world?
You know, you sit down and you read Plato rather than watching another installment of your favorite TV serial, and you begin to try in your own mind to answer some of the questions that he poses. You read as much as you can. You keep a journal. You write essays. You write poems. You write plays. And you do that to find out what you take to be true. I think that's completely possible, though I think that there are any number of assaults against this particular life. And not the least of these assaults comes from the academy, which has been busy dismantling the whole idea of truth for the last 30 years.
Hmm. Well, so it almost sounds like you're also advocating for a shift within education also, within the academy, in approaching these subjects.
Well, I think that the general attitude, if I may be a little over rapid, toward literary and philosophical texts is that they are to be analyzed, described, and often debunked. But we never ask a simple question of a book by Plato. Is it true or is it not? And unless we take the time to ask that question, is it true or is it not, I think that most humanistic education is going to become a vehicle for the sharpening of a mind that is an acute mind, but one that has no values and no commitment to wisdom whatsoever and is perfectly capable of going off and taking on any job without much compunction.
As I was reading your book, I was just thinking to myself how incongruous this all seems to, you know, modern life. I mean, if someone walked up to me and said that they were going to quit their job and lead a more compassionate life in the same vein as Jesus, I would think they were insane. I mean, it almost sounds delusional.
You are steeped in the ideologies of consumer capitalism. Of course you think so. Do you think Jesus has stayed around for 2,000 years because his message is empty? Consumer capitalism is crap. It's on the way out. But the message of Jesus and Plato and Homer will live forever. These are just little blips on the screen, and they will soon be shown to be the transparently ridiculous things that they are, and we'll need something else.
what you're saying in this book isn't controversial, right? I mean, it's not uncommon to hear someone criticize materialistic culture and advocate a return to the wisdom of the ancients or the classical texts. What's new about your argument, though? I mean, why did you want to write this now, as opposed to just referring back to someone else?
Well, what's new about it is that it's old and is on the verge of being forgotten by most people. You just told me that if someone told you that they were going to go off and follow the teachings of Rabbi Jesus, you would tell them that they were half mad. If that's the way you feel about it, then surely this is an old idea that has lost its power. As Dr. Johnson said, we need to be reminded more than we need to be informed. And I think that's what I'm trying to do. There's nothing original in this book, nothing. It is simply a revitalization of ideas that are so valuable that it would be truly crushing if they passed out of circulation.
Mark Edmondson teaches English at the University of Virginia. He and Raymond Tungekar were talking about his new book, Self and Soul.